Then when Trotsky and Zinoviev and Kamenev and their followers united into what was called the left opposition, all still arguing about these issues of industrialization and democracy within the party, Stalin could also throw their members out of the party and defeat them. And finally, when in 1928, Stalin turns against Bukharin and the so-called right opposition, he could also use his power within the party to remove their members, to defeat them in debates, to have them voted out of the leadership. Now, once Stalin succeeded in becoming the dominant leader in the party, largely engineered through his technical power within the party, he made his heroic and willful political cultural style the hallmark of the times themselves. Given his personality, as we've already seen, given his style, it's not surprising, and we've seen indications of this, that he felt, in fact, quite uncomfortable with Bukharin's ideas about NEP is so gradual. In particular, Bukharin once said NEP was a process of writing to socialism on the back of a peasant nag. For Stalin, he imagined himself in a more on a more gallant steed, in a more on a more heroic and willful course than this. Of course, Stalin could have done little to change policy had this all been only about him and his instincts and his personality. One has to admit, he touched a nerve, certainly among communists, but also among many workers and others in society. He spoke to the dissatisfactions of many in Soviet Russia in the 1920s. First, of course, one has to remember the economic problems that I've described before, slowing economic growth in the late 1920s, the inability to overcome, to go beyond the pre-war levels due to lack of new investment capital. Problems also began to emerge with grain production and sales. Peasants saw little to buy and therefore began to grow less grain again. An economic crisis began to brew. But there were also political problems with NEP. Part of it was international. There was growing talk in the Soviet Union in the mid-1920s that a war of the capitalist countries against the USSR was likely, indeed even certain. And the country was clearly unprepared for this, in the sense that one needed to push industrial preparedness forward began to be an important political debate. But most important, and I've already indicated this a little before, there was extensive domestic discontent with the policies of the new economic policy period. Among rank-and-file communists, among workers, and especially among young people, there was growing dissatisfaction, a growing desire, in fact, for a more, like Stalin wanted, a more heroic and aggressive approach to building communism, something more like during the fighting years of the Civil War. Many things about NEP bothered many, many Russians, young, worker, communists in particular. The inequalities, the rise of the new rich in the city, people called NEP men, wealthy traders, or in the countryside, richer peasants called kulaks. They didn't like this. They didn't like the gradualism. They didn't even like the cultural and intellectual pluralism. Why should so many old ideas still be around? Better to create a society that was thoroughly heroic and revolutionary. And a rather good expression of this discontent comes from a novel written in 1925 by Fyodor Gladkov called Cement. And in one scene, a woman declares her feelings about NEP. She was a former Red Army soldier and now a member of the Communist Party. "We've destroyed and we've suffered. But suddenly the past rises again with a joyful sound. I don't know where the nightmare is, in those years of blood, misery, and sacrifice, or in now, in this current bacchanalia of rich shop windows and drunken cafes. What was the good of the mountains of corpses? So that scoundrels and vampires would again enjoy all the good things in life and get fat by robbery?" And as this suggests, there was something even more about people's distaste with NEP, what might be described as a sort of aesthetic, a moral revulsion at all the compromises, at all the inequalities of NEP. One sign of this moral revulsion was a heightened number of suicides during the late 1920s, including quite famous ones such as that of Vladimir Mayakovsky, once a great idealist of the revolutions. But others talked about a new heroic revolutionary advance, the sort that Stalin was ready to provide. And the main policy expression of this was a massive program launched around 1928 of industrial and social and indeed cultural transformation of the country. A rather good expression of the spirit that was going to motivate this sort of drive was expressed by a chief economist working for Stalin in 1927, in which he said, "Our task is not to study economics, but to change it. We are bound by no laws. There are no fortresses that a Bolshevik can't storm." And this slogan, "there are no fortresses that Bolsheviks cannot storm," would in fact become one of Stalin's favorite expressions and would be heard everywhere during these years after 1928. In fact, these words in many ways captured the essence of Stalin's political personality, as we've seen, and the essence of the emerging Stalinist political culture. And this is the story to which we'll turn next.